English Radio.
The Taliban proposed a three-month ceasefire with the Afghan government in return for the release of 7,000 militant prisoners. South Africa is set to deploy 25,000 more soldiers following days of looting and violence in the country. The death toll from heavy rains and floods in Germany rises to 42. Dozens of people are reported missing. It's good to have you with us. The Taliban have proposed a three-month ceasefire in return for release of some 7,000 of their members held in Afghan jails. The militant group has also wanted the names of its leaders to be removed from a UN blacklist. An Afghan government negotiator involved in peace talks with the militants has called it a big demand. This as the militants have stepped up attacks on cities and villages, taking a swathe of territory under their control since May. They've also captured several border crossings, including with Pakistan, Iran, and Turkmenistan. The Afghan military has launched offensives to retake the areas captured by the militants. Dozens of Taliban militants have reportedly been killed in the operations. Amin Alami says that Afghan officials and pundits are not much optimistic about the Taliban's truce proposal, and they doubt if the group really is ready for lasting peace.
As we look to the recent remarks and words of the Afghan government officials here, they are not much optimistic about the real will of the Taliban in order to say yes to peace in Afghanistan. For instance, I talked to a university professor regarding to this issue just a few hours ago. He said that given the Taliban militants have captured a large number of districts all over Afghanistan, the having a three-month opportunity is the best option for them to have full control over those districts and secondly recruit more militants in order to strengthen their military front or armed front. On the other hand, many others also believe that given the Afghan government recently released 5,000 Taliban militants from Afghan jails, but instead some of them returned back to the battlefields and in many cases Afghan forces killed a high number of those Taliban who had returned to the battlefields. They argue and urge the Afghan government to not trust the Taliban in this particular issue unless it receives international assurances in this regard.
Meantime, the Taliban have raised their traditional flag above the key border posts between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Recently, the militants have made rapid advances across the country, seizing a series of border posts from Afghan forces, including crossings with Iran, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan. Our correspondent Javed Rana has a report from Islamabad.
This is one of the key crossing points between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Now this border crossing, which divides Afghan town of Spindoldak in Kandahar province on one side and Pakistani town of Chaman on other, is effectively under the control of Afghan Taliban. Taliban reportedly took the crossing with no resistance. This is the second busiest crossing between two countries. The crossing takeover would be a major prize symbolically and strategically if the Taliban's continue to hold it. The government in Kabul has denied Taliban's takeover, although pictures on the social media show the militants have seized the crossing.
The Afghan forces, which were trained by the US and NATO, seem to be falling like house of cards. Capturing of this crossing point, the latest one, is a symbol and a symbolic message to Pakistan that Pakistan has to recognize the reality of Taliban, and Taliban can overtake the entire Afghanistan by force. and this time around there is no resistance at all.
In recent weeks, Taliban recaptured districts after districts, many of them without resistance, after they announced a general amnesty for the Afghan National Army and security forces. The Taliban claim that they have now recaptured 85% of Afghan territory. They have already taken over several other crossing points along with Afghanistan's borders with Iran, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan.
If military confrontation between the Afghan sides persists, we foresee deeper instability, economic meltdown, a fresh wave of refugee influx in neighboring countries. Can we afford to look the other way while our neighbor Afghanistan faces stiffer challenges?
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has vowed on what he called the Taliban's backbone will be broken and the lost territories would be won back. The Taliban's territorial gains have come amid stepped-up U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan after two decades of war and occupation. Analysts believe that recent sequence of events demonstrate that the U.S. legacy for Afghanistan may be continued sense of insecurity and conflict in the region. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
A bomb explosion in southwestern Pakistan has left two military officials dead. Authorities say that three soldiers were also injured after their vehicles was targeted in Balochistan province. No immediate claim of responsibility. However, separatist militants have performed similar attacks in the past. And the blast comes hours after another explosion hit a bus in the north of the country. 13 people, including 9 Chinese workers and 2 Pakistani soldiers, were killed in the incident. Pakistan accuses India of supporting separatists from neighboring Afghanistan. New Delhi has repeatedly denied the accusation. Israel's new prime minister has relaunched a controversial project for the construction of more than 3,400 settler units in the occupied West Bank. The so-called E1 project involves the construction at an unbuilt area of the occupied land. It cuts the land access between Palestinian-inhabited territories and the West Bank, rendering any future unified Palestinian state unviable. Former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also tried to advance the project, but was halted under pressure from the international community, the Palestinian Authority, and rights groups. The project is also expected to draw objections from Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's left-wing coalition partners, as well as the U.S. All Israeli settlements on occupied Palestinian land are illegal under international law. The Israeli military says that Hezbollah can fire up to 3,000 missiles every day at the occupied Palestinian territories if there is a war with Lebanon. Tel Aviv says the Lebanese resistance movement can maintain the barrage for at least a week. The Israeli military estimated that Hezbollah has 130 to 150,000 rockets and missiles in its arsenal, many of them capable of hitting targets deep within Israel. In May, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas fired thousands of rockets at Israel during a war that lasted 11 days. Some of those rockets reached as far as Tel Aviv and even Haifa to the north. Now let's move on. South Africa is calling Army Reserve members in a bid to end days of deadly unrest that has dealt a serious blow to the country's economy. This after the government said it would call out around 25,000 troops to tackle the emergency. South Africa has been rocked by angry protests since the imprisonment of former President Jacob Zuma a week ago. The crisis also stoked fears of food and fuel shortages amid disruptions in several key industries. Authorities say security forces have arrested hundreds of people in connection with looting, arson, and violence. So far, more than 70 people have lost their lives in the turmoil. The death toll from heavy rains and severe flooding in Germany has risen to at least 42. Police say dozens of people have also gone missing, while many are stranded on rooftops. More houses are at risk of collapse. Western states have been hit hardest by extreme weather. Severe flooding has disrupted rail, road, and river transport, leaving many areas cut off in the region. At least 200,000 households are left without power. The Army has been deployed to help with rescue operations. Evacuation orders have been issued for parts of the region. The German Weather Service has forecast more rain for the next 2 days. Cuban president has called for peace, harmony, and respect amid anti-government protests across the nation.
To overcome disagreements between all of us, we have to encourage each other to try and find solutions, even if we sometimes have different points of view on certain issues or different situations.
Miguel Diaz-Canel once again blamed the U.S. for the anti-government protests over the economic downturn in his country. Havana says the economic crisis has been caused by a half century of Washington's sanctions and embargoes. Meantime, Cuba restored internet access and temporarily lifted restrictions on the amount of food and medicine that travelers could bring into the country. The moves were an apparent concession to demands by protesters who took to the streets last weekend. One person has died and more than 100 have been arrested in anti-government protest rallies so far.
As protests continue in Cuba, Iran has warned against any foreign interference in its internal affairs. Tehran has urged an end to Washington's unilateral sanctions on the Caribbean nation. The Iranian Foreign Ministry also highlighted the economic hardships caused by decades of U.S. measures against Cuba, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. Iran says the U.S. is the root cause of many of the problems in Cuba. In a blatant violation of international law, Washington continues to express support for protests in Cuba and seeks to meddle in its affairs. Meanwhile, the Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez has held the U.S. responsible for stirring up violence in Cuba, saying that Washington is using high-tech digital systems to incite protests in the Caribbean island nation. Rodriguez has said that Washington sought to generate disorder and instability to fracture the constitutional order and social consensus in Cuba. He condemned the campaign promoted from U.S. soil through social media to promote riots and destabilizing acts, warning that such irresponsible conduct could have negative implications for the region and even harm the national interests of the U.S.
The United States has, since the 60s, been interfering in the internal affairs of Cuba. Beginning with the Bay of Pigs, they launched not only an invasion of Cuba, but also tried to create paramilitaries there. And in doing so, they also set up a blockade, which affected the internal and the domestic economy of Cuba and had a long-lasting impact for over six decades, costing hundreds of billions of dollars.
A large-scale anti-Cuba communication operation had been underway since June 23, when Havana presented the report Necessity of Ending the Economic, Commercial, and Financial Blockade Imposed by the United States of America on Cuba at the UN General Assembly. The operation includes calls for violence, aggression against authorities, and the assassination of leaders.
A lot of these attempts have ended up failing, but these are all attempts to really strangle the nation and strangle really the civilians. And it's very hypocritical of the United States, who's now decrying interference from foreign countries like Russia or China, to have this history with interfering with other nations like Cuba, but also outside of Cuba throughout Latin America.
Cuba has immensely suffered from U.S. sanctions, which have been plaguing the Caribbean nation for more than 60 years. Now, one estimate puts the economic loss at around $800 billion. The harsh economic restrictions have also affected Cubans' basic needs like food and medicine. The U.S. sanctioned regime is reminiscent of what it has done to countries like Venezuela and Iran.
Protest rallies erupted against the Cuban president Miguel Díaz-Canel's government over the weekend. Thousands took to the streets in major cities, demanding his resignation amid a worsening economic crisis. The unrest comes at a time when Cuba is going through its worst economic crisis in 30 years, with chronic shortages of electricity and food, exacerbated by hefty U.S. sanctions.
There are difficult times due to circumstances, including the blockade, including the pandemic, which is already causing difficulty on the island for many of the people. And the U.S. is continuing to add to that difficulty by continuing these illegal sanctions. And again, it's not just the case for Cuba. We can go to Venezuela.
The Cuban government blames the economic woes mainly on U.S. sanctions and the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. has maintained a harsh economic, financial, and commercial embargo against Cuba for more than 60 years. Numerous resolutions by the U.N. General Assembly have indicated that the blockade is against international law. The social media campaign directed against Cuba is reminiscent of many other regime change programs directed by the U.S.
It was just recently that the UN voted against the U.S. embargo, with only two countries voting against that resolution. That was the U.S. and Israel, while over 180 countries voted to end the illegal embargo or blockade against Cuba. Yet, despite these votes, which have been occurring, you know, every few years or so, the U.S. continues with this blockade,
including the 2019 coup d'etat against the Bolivian President Evo Morales and an attempted coup against President Maduro in Venezuela. The U.S. has recently further tightened the illegal embargo under the pretext of fighting the spread of the coronavirus. Many Cubans have grown frustrated with the economic crisis and a surge in coronavirus cases. Although the current U.S. President Joe Biden had pledged during his presidential campaign to reverse some of Trump's brutal sanctions measured against Cuba, he has yet to remove any of the sanctions imposed by the former Republican president.
All right, we've got one more item to go. The World Health Organization is saying that COVID deaths in Africa have hiked by more than 43% compared to the last week amid a surge in infections. WHO also noted that African countries are facing shortages of oxygen and intensive care beds. Namibia, South Africa, Tunisia, Uganda, and Zambia accounted for 80% of the new deaths recorded in the past week. The surge is driven by public fatigue with key health measures and an increased spread of mutations, including the highly transmissible Delta variant. This while total fatalities from the pandemic across the continent are inching closer to 155,000. More than 6 million people have also been diagnosed with COVID-19 in Africa. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight. Coronavirus cases are rising in several American states like Nevada, where vaccinations lag and the Delta variant is spreading. It now accounts for half of U.S. cases. We now present you an article written by Victoria Bekempis under the heading COVID outbreak among vaccinated Vegas hospital workers underscores Delta risk. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. And now outbreak of COVID-19 among vaccinated staffers at a Las Vegas hospital has highlighted the risk posed by the Delta variant of the virus in the United States, as Nevada struggles with rising COVID cases and stagnating vaccination rates. Hospital officials confirmed to The Guardian 11 workers at the Sunrise Hospital and Medical Center, only one of whom was unvaccinated, tested positive for coronavirus after attending a party in early June. Sunrise's chief executive officer, Todd Sklumberg, said in a statement, "The Center for Disease Control, the CDC, has confirmed that 11 of our colleagues at Sunrise Hospital tested positive for the COVID-19 Delta variant," claiming, "All who tested positive are doing well and have returned to work." The chief executive officer of Sunrise, Todd Sklumberg, added, "We want to acknowledge our colleagues recognized their own symptoms, similar to allergies or the common cold, and chose to get tested. There were no exposures to our patients, and our staff complies with all personal protection equipment guidelines, masking at all times and wearing face shields with all patient encounters." The outbreak, first reported by the Las Vegas Review-Journal, comes amid growing concern in the United States about the Delta variant of the coronavirus, which is now the dominant variant in the country. Because the Delta variant is highly transmissible, authorities have said it's all the more important for unvaccinated people to get their shots, both for personal immunity reasons and to prevent spreading COVID-19 to others. The variant is now being blamed for surges in southern Missouri and northern Arkansas, now the largest U.S. outbreak of new COVID cases. According to the National Public Radio, NPR, authorities have warned that it will only worsen if vaccination rates continue to languish in these areas. While there have been breakthrough cases, health officials have repeatedly claimed that vaccinations provide strong protection, including against the Delta variant of the coronavirus. U.S. authorities claim COVID-19 vaccines, which data have repeatedly shown are safe and effective, reduce the severity of the virus and prevent hospitalizations in the rare breakthrough cases. Mark Pandori, the Nevada State Public Health Laboratory Director, has said that one factor in this breakthrough incident might be the Delta variant's heightened ability to avert immunity. Mark Pandori told the Review Journal, "The viruses that are circulating in July aren't the viruses that were circulating in February. These are the Olympians now." He added, "The ones that are circulating now have a better ability to get around vaccination." Concerns about the Delta variant of the coronavirus affecting people who have been fully vaccinated come as Nevada struggles to contain a rise in cases. The Las Vegas Review-Journal notes on Tuesday, 13th of July, Nevada health officials reported 855 new cases, with the state's two-week positivity rate hitting 10%, a surge from 9th of June low of 3.3%. Brian Labors, an epidemiologist and assistant professor at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas School of Public Health, said that 60% of Nevada cases sequenced were now the Delta variant. Several weeks ago, the Delta variant comprised just 16% of sequenced cases. Brian Labors, the epidemiologist, added, "Delta is clearly the dominant strain in Nevada," adding, "Over the past month, our numbers have been continually trending upwards, and the Delta variant is obviously contributing to that." Brian Labors noted that when you couple that with low immunization rates and our community being open 100%, you have the right conditions for that kind of COVID spread. Bye. Nevada, health officials say that 46.01% of Nevadans aged 12 and older have completed vaccinations, and 54.46% have initiated vaccinations. According to health officials, this refers to the number of first doses given. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, across the United States, 65% of those 12 and older have received at least one dose of the vaccine, while 56.3% are fully vaccinated. Brian Labus, an epidemiologist, says the rates we're seeing right now of vaccination are nowhere where we need to be to stop transmission. These percentages also fall far lower than what is probably required for herd immunity, a metric that has shifted upwards with the pandemic's continuation and Delta variant's ascent. Brian Labus added, this variant is probably pushing that number higher because it spreads much more easily. Meanwhile, the Nevada Independent reports younger Nevadans are the least likely to receive vaccines, presenting a challenge as they are most likely to be out and about. The website says only half of Nevadans aged between 20 and 59 have received their first jab, compared with more than 75% of residents aged 60 and older. In response, Nevada's governor, Steve Sisolak, announced on 1st of July that the state would seek help from the federal government, noting that the White House has announced its intention to send surge teams to hard-hit areas. A statement from Nevada Governor Steve Sisolak's office says Nevada is working with federal agencies to ramp up its initiatives to vaccinate more people. According to a report by the Nevada Hospital Association, there are a few positive signs. The increase seems to be contained to southern Nevada, which has the most medical resources in the state, and personal protection equipment supply flow is not in a state of chaos. The organization claims patients are less sick, seem to be spending less time in the hospital, and are not requiring intensive care or mechanical ventilation as frequently as in the past. The bad news is there is no current signal that indicates this news is slowing down, noting that the majority of the hospitalized patients are reportedly unvaccinated people.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Muhammad Mahmoud Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin wa bihi nasta'in wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, welcome once again to yet another episode of The Bridge, a program in which we try to discuss the different supplications of Imam Zainul Abideen alayhi salam, supplications that have come in the form of a prayer manual known as As-Sahifatul Sajjadiyya. We have been discussing the eighth supplication of this prayer manual, and that is on the dua of Imam Zainul Abideen alayhi salam when seeking refuge from evil traits and blameworthy actions. We are still discussing the first verse of this beautiful supplication, and that is when Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam starts seeking refuge of Allah from evil traits. And in our previous session, we mentioned an outline of how the traits are formed in the human soul. What is the phenomena of the formation of the evil traits in the soul in general?
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
A very important point that we would like to also point out to is that here, notice that, you know, when it comes to changing the traits of a person, usually the human being sees himself as an independent person in doing so. For example, he will try his best to avoid anger, he will try his best to avoid greed, he will try his best to avoid the evil things that he knows that these are evil things and they are not good, especially those things that it has not come in the form of traits in himself. It is still in the state of hal and state, as we mentioned earlier. And sometimes, no, he has formed a habit in himself, but he doesn't like that habit. That means that it is not united with him, because he does not like that habit that he has formed. For example, he is niggardly, he doesn't like giving charity. Or for example, he doesn't like to, you know, respect others. All these beautiful characteristics that he should have, he does not have, for example. And he has evil traits, so he wants to change. So he struggles. He struggles by thinking, what should he do? By looking at what the ulama have said, how to go about it when you want to, you know, monitor yourself and change and transform yourself, right? So he struggles his best. This is one way of looking at the whole situation. But then a monotheist, a person who knows that any change that happens in anybody, it is only by Allah's permission, and it is only by Allah's tawfiq and the success that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bestows to this person. Never will a person be able to purify himself, however much he starts, you know, struggling. The reason is that if Allah does not want, nothing can happen. So this should be there in his mind, that all right, we have to struggle. That is the path that we should struggle. Laysa lil insani illa ma sa'a, that the human being will not have save what he struggles for. But then this struggle itself also cannot transpire without Allah's assistance, without Allah's help. And if he puts it in his mind that, you know, everything is controlled by Allah, that even, you know, going towards good and refraining from bad is also Allah's bestowal, then he will always ask Allah. And that is when he says, Inni a'udhu bika. When Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam starts saying, Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min hayajanil hirs, he's actually telling us indirectly that, you know, I believe that even when I want to leave these evil traits, I cannot do so without Allah's help. And this is what is known as, you know, seeking refuge in a monotheistic way, not in a way whereby a person thinks that, okay, I'm seeking refuge, but you know, I can also work hard and I can also get that position of, you know, being away from these evil traits. No, we cannot. In fact, there is a very beautiful statement that we now and again are taught to recite, and sometimes we also recite partly in prayer. We say la hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-aliyyi al-azim. This is that monotheistic expression that we should have, that there is no state, la hawla wa la quwwata, nor is there any power, illa billah, save by Allah's power and, you know, through Allah's strength. I don't have anything of my own. When a person understands this and prays, it makes a great difference. And that is when he sees that there is a change in him. And this is how we have to supplicate. So this is one of the noteworthy points that we should understand while we say, Allahumma inni a'udhu bika.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, a very important thing also is to know what this is all about, the evil traits that Imam starts enumerating and starts seeking refuge of Allah from them. The first thing that he mentions is Hayajanul Hirs. What is Hayajanul Hirs? Hayajan, the word Hayajan, the root word Hayajan, Ha, Ye, and Jim. If you look at authoritative lexicographers, they talk of what is, it is known as Thawran. Thawran means, you know, something that is stirred up, it is aroused, it is evoked, it is provoked. These are the things that we can say when it comes to Hayajan, Hayajanul Hirs. That Hirs, and Hirs is, Alaqa Shadida, or something that you desire extremely. And we call it greed, for example. Especially when we talk of Hirs, we talk of, you know, greed with regard to the things of the world. That is what is reprimanded and it is blameworthy. Otherwise, if you look at the word hirs, it is also used for positive things. You know, like for example, if a person has extreme desire for the good of another, so that is a positive thing. Inshallah, we will look at this phrase in detail and also look at it from the Quranic point of view also, so that we understand it properly. We come to the end of the program. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad. وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين.
That was the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را یا سجاد.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
tourism. In the name of God, salam, and welcome to the second episode of our series, Health Tourism. In the last episode, we discussed various types of tourism and learned that medical tourism is one form of tourism which is growing significantly year after year. Many people travel to other countries with the aim of receiving quality medical services at a cheaper and more reasonable cost than they would at home. Please stay with us for a more detailed discussion of medical tourism. Tourism is the result of combining two profitable industries, that is, travel and medical industries. Therefore, this kind of tourism also includes a variety of subcategories, such as medical tourism, curative tourism, and wellness tourism. All of them are named based on patients' needs. Considering variety of definitions with regard to health tourism, we tend to mention all as health tourism, and our focus will be mainly on familiarizing patients with medical centers and services provided in the Islamic Republic of Iran. In order to increase their revenues, many countries all around the world are keen to offer medical services. However, due to the critical nature of this field and the lack of required medical infrastructure and experienced professionals, not all countries are able to do so. Among all countries, Iran is considered one of the best in offering medical services to foreign nationals. Benefiting from various eye-catching historical sites and stunning nature, the country attracts a huge number of tourists who come to enjoy Iran's tourist attractions every year. According to reports, Iran ranks 10th globally on the list of world's historical sites and 5th in terms of natural attractions. Besides that, Iran has become one of the pioneering countries in the region and the world thanks to its scientific development in the field of medicine, excellent and highly trained doctors, as well as utilizing state-of-the-art facilities, which has made this country a popular destination for medical tourists, especially those tourists and patients who visit Iran from neighboring countries. Nowadays, many patients from regional countries such as Kuwait, Qatar, Iraq, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Republic of Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, and so on, prefer to travel to Iran instead of European countries to get medical services. The close distance between Iran and neighboring countries enables patients to go back in a short time after receiving excellent treatments from Iranian professionals and doctors and their brilliant expertise. Another reason is the reasonable cost of treatment in Iran that has made this country a popular destination for patients. The special attention from Iran's neighboring countries, as well as Iranian doctors' expertise and qualifications, has encouraged Iran's health ministry to launch a special department called Department of Health Tourism of Ministry of Health to facilitate health tourism for those in need and adopt rules and regulations for hospitals admitting foreign patients. According to these regulations, hospitals, clinics, and other medical centers with foreign applicants are required to launch International Patient Department, or IPD. Otherwise, they are not allowed to admit foreign patients unless in emergency situation. Medical centers with IPD permit are required to follow related instructions. Those hospitals with IPD permit should undertake few tasks, such as doing needed coordination for admitting patients, accompanying them during their stay in Iran, offering medical services and recovery cures after their surgery, and all sort of services patients need throughout their stay in the country. The IPD staff are responsible for responding patients' application and contacting them via phone and email and holding conference with their attending physician. Patients can easily contact IPD of each hospital to know more about the costs and services of treatment they offer beforehand. Also, the IPD staff are in charge of doing essential coordination with doctors and hospitals, coordination with surgery rooms, care unit, discharge and finance units. Currently, there are more than 150 hospitals and medical centers in Tehran and other Iranian cities with special permit for treating foreign patients. Iran is one of the countries in the world with high expertise in treating cardiovascular diseases, infertility, ophthalmic and neurological disorders, as well as treating different cancers. Iran also benefits from a high reputation in the region in the field of plastic surgery. Also, the country ranks first in Asia and third in the world in kidney transplant with laparoscopy, and according to a 2019 report, ranks first in the world in liver transplant. Iranian optometrists are among high-ranking experts in the world, and the facilities being utilized in some optometry centers in Iran are the best ones that are being used in only few countries in the world. Most of the foreign patients in Iranian hospitals have been respectively admitted for female diseases, cardiovascular diseases, nose job, eye surgery, and general surgeries. The Iranian cities of Tehran, Qom, Mashhad, Ahvaz, Urumiye, and Shiraz have received most of the foreign patients. Patients and medical tourists can receive more information about hospitals and medical centers with IPD permit in various ways. One of them is the Iran Ministry of Health Medical Tourism Department. Its website is iht.en.behdasht.gov.ir. By a quick browse in this website, you can get information you need about the hospital and medical centers in Iran with IPD permit, the rules and regulations, as well as tourism in Iran and Iranian hotels in different languages. Iran's health ministry has also announced that it will issue permits to those qualified tourism centers and institutes that are willing to work in the field of health tourism. These centers are ready to offer various types of services to medical tourists, and they can trustfully assign these centers the coordination job with the hospitals and let them reserve the hotel. To know more about these centers and institutes, the applicants can easily go to Iran's Health Ministry website. Also, many of these institutes have branches in many countries where the patients can ask them for more information in person. Dear listeners, this was the second episode of our program, Health Tourism. In the next episode, we will introduce one of reputable optometry hospitals in the Iranian capital, Tehran, called Farabi Hospital. Till next program, goodbye. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim. a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear brothers and sisters welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. There are certain things that we as human beings need to learn. And we learn this either by our parents, the environment that we are in, the friends that we have, and so on and so forth. And those things that we learn is what makes up our demeanor, our, if I like to say, behavioral characteristics, and so on and so forth. Therefore, we see that the concept of adab or adab, which can be translated as etiquettes or some have translated it as manners, rather it's the way a person acts, and it's those things in which a person has learned. Because when we are born, we are not born with these etiquettes, with these mannerisms and so on and so forth. These are learned. We either learn it via seeing people or we learn it by being taught. Therefore we see in this beautiful tradition from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, he speaks about the best of manners and the best of etiquettes. And he says that the best of manners or etiquettes are those which prevents you from committing sins. So we see there are certain etiquettes or mannerisms that we learn or we can learn that may lead us towards sins. For example, we can learn how to be stingy. We can learn how to be greedy. We can also learn how to be chivalrous. And it all depends on the environment that we grow up in, the environment that we experience. Therefore, it is important, especially as parents, to understand these ahadith and these teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. For the first madrasa, or the first school of a child is the home, is the parents. So if the parents have good etiquettes, even though they may have not been brought up in a particular way, but if the parents decided or have become religious and so on and so forth, they can then pass on these etiquettes and these Islamic mannerisms. These etiquettes that will prevent their children from sinning. First of all, they have to practice it and then obviously then try and pass it on. Or find good teachers for our children, teachers who will be able to pass on this Islamic tradition of adab, this Islamic tradition of good mannerisms, good etiquettes, and so on and so forth. And as we see, those etiquettes which prevent us from sinning. And obviously, we need to go further and hopefully, whenever we get the chance, to further delve into what these etiquettes actually are. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to access these etiquettes, to inculcate them in our lives, and hopefully the generations that come after us learn these adab and etiquettes from us. Inshallah, until next time, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.